We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 386. Today, we are brought to you by Untuck It. We're also brought to you by Manscaped. And last but not least, we're brought to you by Indochino. I'm back on the podcast after a week hiatus. Scott, you're in your Savages pom-pom beanie, looking very festive for the holiday season, even though it's just barely past Halloween at this point. What's up?
Yeah, it's not a Christmas beanie. It's a top hat, Yankees logo, but beanie.
It could double as a
Savages.
Beanie.
It could be all of the above. It could be anything you want it to be. It's everything and more. Yeah, man. Welcome back. Happy marriage. Happy marriage to you and yours, I guess.
that was so sincere. Thank you. Thank you very much, Scott. I appreciate that.
It was just weird the way it came out. I don't even know how you say that. But no, it was congratulations. Does it feel any different?
No, not really. We were talking about that when we first signed on here because we had already lived together. So no major life changes at this point. I can only imagine people who, and this I guess probably happened more.
Like pre-1960?
Yeah, more so when our parents were getting married, that people didn't live together before they got married. And it's just all of a sudden it is like, okay, here's life, kids.
This is it.
Go get it.
Yeah. For better or worse, for real.
Yeah.
In the same room or not.
Yeah.
This is happening.
Us millennials like to test things out before we actually commit.
Yeah. No, it's true. I actually think that's one of the better changes in the world today is actually testing that thing out, because I think it helps the longevity a little bit. You kind of understand what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's good to be back. It was, I always have FOMO when there's news going on and things I want to be talking about, and I'm not able to for whatever reason because I have to miss an episode. And it's rare that one of us misses an episode, either travel or, in this case, right after my wedding. But like, we even fight through illnesses and injuries to always make it on the podcast. So when there's news happening and I'm not able to throw my two cents in, it always pisses me off.
Yeah, well, you have Twitter for that. You can rage on Twitter and say your things there.
You know, I tried to lay low the whole week because just like, you know, the Yankees were not playing in the World Series. I was casually checking in on the World Series. I'd watch the games here and there, but I'm not gonna put Leanne through that when it's not even the Yankees who are playing in the World Series. You know, so I tried to lay low on all things baseball for the last week.
I mean, it kind of makes sense. And you just got married. You're trying to the Yankee, because it could have been a problem. Game four could have been a problem.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
and I know it was kind of like going a little below the radar, even though it really wasn't. But I think for you, you were kind of playing it down, even though I think that if the Yankees were in the World Series and game four did happen on the night you got married, there would have been a lot more. There would have been tension probably on the bride's side more than anything. And then you would have been like trying to overcompensate for that. And like, there would have just been more anxiety in the air. So to a point, for your specific isolated reason, and just you and Leanne, literally just you and Leanne on that given day for those few hours, it was a good thing that the Yankees were not playing in the World Series.
For the longevity of my marriage, probably yes.
For getting married, for her saying
yes. But you know, because that is something that could have been brought up from here till the end of time. If I even so much as glanced at a television or an iPad or something like that during the wedding.
Yeah.
And we were told this before, obviously, and I'm sure everyone who's been married knows what I'm talking about. The day goes by in the blink of an eye. It's like all of a sudden you arrive, you're taking a couple pictures, boom, you're standing up there getting married, and then the night's over. And it's like the last song is happening. And I'm just like, what the hell? Where did the night just go? I feel like we just got here.
Yeah. No, yeah, it does. It goes by in a blur, for sure. There's too many things happening at once, and time just kind of stands still. So it's it was a fun wedding. I went through the whole thing last week.
Yeah, I appreciate the kind words. You guys sort of turned it into a wedding review podcast for about 15
minutes. Yeah, well, you know, it just kind of kept going in the beginning, so we just kind of went with it. And I know JJ was curious, too. So
I hope all the listeners out there were curious.
Yeah, well, they got it either way. But, yeah, it was fun. It was a good time. I'm glad everything went well. So
yeah. Well, there's still plenty of stuff to talk about before we talk about the big news of the week. The holidays are almost here, and you know what that means. Gifts, and what better gift to give the guy in your life than a stylish shirt that fits just right. Unlike most brands, Untuckit shirts are actually designed to be worn untucked. Untuckit shirts always fall at just the right length, no matter his size, so he will look casual and sharp. Have you ever seen an untucked button-down? They look bad. They look awful. Something is not right about it. Why? It's because they weren't meant to be worn that way. Thankfully, there's Untuckit, the original button-down shirt that actually was designed to be worn untucked. No matter your size or shape, Untuckit shirts always fall at the perfect untucked length. And with the holidays near, there's no better gift for your favorite guy who needs an upgrade. And if you're like me, you know it can be difficult to find because I have a shorter torso and longer legs. So whether I'm buying a standard large or a standard medium, something's going to be off. With Untuckit, it comes to the perfect length, right at the belt, and it looks good untucked. They have 50 plus fit combinations. So Untuckit shirts look great on tall, short, slim, and athletic guys of all ages. Whether you're shopping for the perfect holiday gift or just trying to craft a smart, relaxed style of your own, Untuckit is the way to go. Visit Untuckit.com and use code BLUE for 20% off at checkout. That's UNTUCKIT.com and promo code BLUE for 20% off. So Chapman and the Yankees agree to a third-year add-on for $18 million. This was the big shoe-to-drop, first big shoe-to-drop in the Yankees offseason. And I think depending on if they let Chapman walk to free agency, really, and moved on from him, that would have been that would have shifted what the team's plans are for at least building the bullpen this offseason. So this was I think, something that Cashman just wanted to like get done with ASAP so he can move on.
I mean, I kind of think Chapman wanted to get it done too. You know, when you're looking at the money and you see what happened last year with the free agent market and, you know, directly related to relievers specifically, when you're looking at these guys trying to sign and get, I can't think of his freaking name right now.
Kimbrel?
Thank you. I forget his name now because I want to, one, and two, he's in the National League and out of sight, out of mind. Kimbrel, it took forever for him to sign. He wasn't getting the contract he wanted. Obviously ended up going into the season with him and Keuchel with their status kind of looming. And I think Aroldis Chapman has all the money he needs in the world at this point, wants to be in a place that's comfortable for him. Obviously was able to get, you know, a very solid amount of money on the back end of that contract. And when you look at what 3 years from now for Aroldis Chapman, like it's probably going to be coming damn close to the end. Maybe he gets one more contract, but it'll be, I think at that point, we're going to be looking at the peak Chapman definitely running dry.
This reminded me of when Sabathia had his opt out in the contract and was threatening to opt out. I believe it was after the 2012 season, and the Yankees had to tack on that $25 million at the end, where when they were doing it, you knew it was not good. He's not going to be worth $25 million when he's pitching in right. Whatever season that was for Sabathia. And he wasn't worth the $25 million. And it was funny because the following year they signed him to like a $12 or $13 million deal. And he was worth the $13 million. He's just not worth the $25 million. And that might be something that we're going to experience with Chapman in 2022, where he's not worth an $18 million contract, but maybe he's worth a $10 million contract. But at least you don't have to go out there and find a new reliever. And Chapman did, I think, prove...
Despite, I mean, he won AL
despite the hanging relief, slider.
He won Altuve. AL relief pitcher of the year for the American League. So the guy came out there and was literally the best reliever in the American League. So,
but he proved, this is a concern that I know you and I had when they signed him to this 5-year contract. What's he going to look like when his fastball is not 102 miles an hour anymore?
Right. Yeah.
But I think he proved that he can. It's funny saying this. He can live at 99. And his slider has improved a bunch.
His slider has definitely improved. That's the biggest key. He can throw it for a strike. He's confident in it. And people still have to look out for that high 90s.
I still don't love the pitch selection to Altuve, but that doesn't change the fact that over the course of the year, his slider was a much more valuable pitch for him.
At times, he could throw his slider more for a strike than he could his fastball.
Yeah, so I think that gives the Yankees confidence, at least he's not going to be a total worthless reliever arm in 3 years. And I think he probably would have done better or at least matched 3 years, $48 million on the open market. Kimbrel got 3 years from the Cubs. I know it took until the middle of the season, but he got 3 years. So the Yankees are probably saying, okay, we would have to sign a reliever of Chapman's caliber to 3 years minimum. So let's just tack on this extra year.
So that's the thing, like, when you're looking at what happened here, and I think this is a good move for the Yankees because, you know, people will look at the money and they'll be like, and they just think of the Altuve home run and they'll be like, oh, man, what are they doing spending money on this? Go get a starting pitcher. It's you know, the narrative that will just never die until they sign somebody big. But this is now this is a strength of the team that continues to be a strength. It's a locked down strength now for additional time, because if you were to opt out and not come with the Yankees, I don't even think they would have to go out and find somebody big, because I think they have internal options. We talked about this a few weeks ago. They have a guy named Britton who had a phenomenal season, who has been a big time closer before. They have a guy like Chad Green who has now shown that he can be that kind of, you know, eighth, ninth inning guy. So, you know, while it wouldn't be as deep, I do think they have guys that could have bridged that gap very well, and they would have been okay. But they're still losing one of those guys now would not be, you know, available early in a game, obviously. So the depth stays on point. I think the entire bullpen essentially stays on point. Minus Dellin Betances wasn't here all year, but that's one of the guys that that could really, really solidify that back end, you know, as long as he's healthy and they re-sign him.
Yeah, and they could still bring in Betances still. I don't think this means.
No, absolutely. Because I think it's gonna. If they do, it's not gonna be a huge contract anyway. So for Betances, yeah. I mean.
And I saw people complaining that the Yankees need to be focusing on the starting rotation and not about the bullpen and let Chapman walk because we have enough bullpen arms as is. And while I agree the rotation is a much bigger concern than the bullpen at this point, that doesn't mean you can just need to stop worrying about the bullpen. Like, you could do both. The Yankees are in a position to do both. You can sign Aroldis Chapman and also sign a free agent. We're going to talk about the free agents in the starting rotation in a minute. But you could still sign Gerrit Cole. The Yankees have the ability to sign Gerrit Cole, even though they just gave Chapman an extension.
Yeah, they do. They have the ability to sign anybody. They have the ability to do anything they want.
They print money, okay? They could sign everybody if they wanted to. I don't think they want to. That's a different argument. But they could.
Yeah, I think a lot of teams could if they wanted to. But the thing is that when you're looking at this team, it's a similar to me. It's the same type of argument when we're looking at the end of the season. Do we want to get healthy or do we want to play for home field advantage? Well, you know, there's one that's important, and the other one is this and that. It's like you just got to let them go and do their things, because in a timeline, it may not be according to the way you want to see it. But they can both happen. Things can happen in positive ways. Just be patient.
Home field advantage was so important in the World
so
Series.
So important. Oh, my God.
I also think the reliever market this winter affected things with Chapman, because he was far and away the best option of the free agents' relief pitchers. You have guys like Will Smith, Drew Pomeranz, Will Harris, Daniel Hudson, Dellin Betances, obviously, Joe Smith, Chris Martin, and Steve Chisnek. As other relief, those are like the top relief options. Yeah. Chapman's a clear and away best guy of that bunch.
But not even close. The class is different.
Whereas last year, Kimbrel was a free agent. He was asking for ridiculous 6 years, I think, when he first entered the market. But Britton was out there. David Robertson was out there. There's
Ottavino
was at, like, maybe there weren't. They didn't have the resume that Kimbrel had, but when you're projecting what is this guy going to be over the next 3 years, those are all very similar productive relievers, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of production.
So why is the team going to pay 6 years for Kimbrel? We learned they're not going to. That would be asinine. But this offseason, a team that's looking for a reliever, is going to say, yeah, I'm going to pay Chapman because he's far and away the best option we have on the free agent market.
But the thing is for Chapman's side too, when you're looking at what your scenario is going to be, and Kimbrel was the best reliever arguably last year in the American League, and you know, one of the best in baseball, if not the best, and he got basically stalled out into the middle of the year, didn't get what he wanted, and then ended up taking a 3-year deal. You have 2 years guaranteed with the Yankees. Why not try to add on to that and stay where you are in a situation that you know is very good, that is you know, optimal for you and your family and all these things, and you're in New York, like, everything good, you know, regarding the entire situation, or chance it and maybe get a situation that's like as good. It didn't make sense. So when you're seeing the amount of money, that's why I didn't think he was going to opt out, because those long-term contracts have basically become non-existent for these relief guys.
Okay, people are saying he didn't opt out. He would have opted out if they didn't give him that third year.
Yeah, but he didn't. That's the whole point. Okay. Because now
they gave him the third year.
Of course, but he didn't opt out. If he had opted out, the negotiations now are all inclusive for 3 years, not 1 year. So when you don't opt out, you're negotiating 1 year.
I think we're splitting hairs on that though, because
it's a big deal.
For all intents and purposes, he opted out and signed a 3 year contract worth
$48 million. And I'm gonna tell you why. Because he did not opt out, he still had the leverage. There was still leverage of that money, and you can go for that third year. If you opt out, now all your leverage is gone and it's in the wind, and it's based on what other teams will do and what people will pay you. Now you're competing a lot more. Whereas you don't opt out, you know what you're getting in those first 2 years because you've already negotiated that. You've already signed that. That's a given. Now you just have to negotiate for one more year. And because it's a player opt out, you're in control. So I think it's a very different scenario
with
the
Yankees. That's why these player opt outs have become so popular. Agents are fighting for them because it gives the player the power. And for especially when you're coming off a year that Chapman had, or a year that Sabathia had in 2012. When you're valuable to the team and you can opt out, you have them by the balls. You dictate what happens. There's very few instances where the player dictates what happens.
Absolutely. And that's why I think that, you know, he comes off, has a very, very good year, named the best reliever in the American League. And now he's in a position where he can sign that, you know, get that extra $3 million on the year that he probably wouldn't get it anyway. And he knows, again, I really do. When you have a guy getting later in his career, the situations become much more important. A guy who's made as much money as he has in his career, the situation becomes that much more important, you know, as far as like the considerations and what you have to, you know, go through as far as ticking off your different options for where you're going to play. And 3 years is a long time. So you want to make sure that you're in a good place.
And it also, they built in the Britain option opt out after 2020, knowing that Chapman was in this situation when they signed Britain last year, because it was a weird contract, right? Where it was a 3 year deal, but it could be worth 2 years and it could be worth 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So next year, Britain can opt out, and if he opts out, the Yankees can let him walk, or the Yankees can say, we're going to exercise your two years of options and pay him through 2022.
It's a great move for the Yankees, because what they were doing is CYA, baby. They were covering their ass and making sure. And, you know, it also puts them further into and away from that injury, further into his playing days after the repaired injury to his Achilles. And I think then, you know, you're obviously able to get more of an idea of who he is post-injury, like a clear idea of who he is. And I think we saw that this year. The guy just was really getting better throughout the year and throughout the playoffs was just a rock, really just a phenomenal, phenomenal piece in that bullpen.
So say Britain has a duplicate year that he just had. Do you think he opts out? He will be, I'm forgetting his age. I'm looking up his age right now. He's 31 now, so he'll be 32 next year. And he could be potentially, the Yankees could pick him up for 2 years at $13.5 million a year, or he could just exercise. They could exercise. He could say, I'm going to pick up my 1 year option and be paid 13. But I could see next year he opts out if he has another good year.
Yeah. I mean, again, that's kind of the beauty of this contract, is it gives him an opportunity to say, hey, I'm more valuable, or the Yankees say, hey, you know what, we negotiated this contract well ahead of time, and now we're going to take advantage of it because it was part of our, to give you this length of a contract, we need to have some options and we need to be able to control things. So I could see them definitely re-signing him. $13 million for a guy like Britain, it's essentially having two closers in the back, and it's still giving you that insurance for a fall off. If Chapman were to fall off at some point, it's still giving you a big time guy that can close games. And I think the Yankees really enjoy having that. They like that. They've built this team around having that, two big rocks, or, you know, the back of their bullpen being a strong, strong part of this team. So I don't think they're going to go away from that at this point. They're too far deep into it.
Yeah. Yeah. They're, even though they're, they're a bullpen team. They're not changing their bullpen philosophy just because their starting rotation was not good enough this year to win a World Series. I think.
Well, I mean, kind of. It was good. It was good enough to get to the World Series. They just the bats didn't do it.
My point is, they're not going to change their philosophy on a bullpen, even though they could potentially be changing their philosophy on a starting rotation. I don't know if they're going to. I don't see them doing it, but they could and still keep their current bullpen philosophy. There's no reason you can't do both. There's no rule out there saying you can't do both.
Where's the little girl shrugging and saying, why not both? The whole thing is now the Yankees have that solid bullpen. It's there. It's locked up, ready to go. Dellin Betances would be the other guy. But they still have, you know, a pile of cash, Scrooge McDuck amounts of money diving in and swimming in it. Why not go sign, you know, Gerrit Cole? Or why not both? Let's go get him and Strasburg, you know? Let's just handle that. Let's go back to 2009, sign the two biggest fish on the market, and just go get a World Series.
Before those fish are even out there, maybe they make decisions on those guys. But Didi's another player that – there was a quote I saw put out that I don't know who said it, but it was about the Yankees' intentions regarding Didi. They're not really talking about it much, but they, quote, like him as a person and see him as a bounce-back candidate as a player. And to me, this just struck me as the Yankees want to get Didi on a prove-me deal for next year. That is what they would be – that what they would love. Prove it, Didi. We believe in you, but you didn't do it last year. You're coming off an injury. Let's see it. So – I think that's what the Yankees are going to be going for.
I think there's two people in this category. You're looking at Betances, unfortunately, because that guy just gets screwed every time, unless a team comes in and swoops in for like a three-year deal, which I could still see happening. I could see a team gambling on Betances. And then Didi as well. The Yankees are going to be trying to get values on both of these guys. And if they get the value that they want, we've seen now in the past 2 to 3 years, Cashman sets numbers on people. He sets a term on people in his mind and in his meetings before he goes and sits. And if we're not at those terms and at those numbers with whatever the variation is that's okay with him, he'll walk away from it. We've seen it time and time again.
Patrick Corbin, they've set his number at $100 million over 5 years.
Yep.
And he said, I'm going to get more than that. And Cashman said, okay, see you later.
That's fine. Yeah, go ahead. And then he just won a World Series. But the thing is, I think they will do that. But I do believe that they think that they can get both of these guys at a bargain. And I kind of agree with them. I think Betances, again, like I said, I think somebody will give him years. So that could be, you know, especially on an option, that could be something that they'll have to battle with and could definitely get Betances out of town. But Didi, off of that injury and the season that he had, he looked bad in a lot of times. He did not look like the same Didi Gregorius that we have seen in the past, and obviously doesn't play well to his strength as a free agent. So I could see that happening.
And I could see Didi signing a prove me contract with the Yankees. I couldn't really see him signing a prove me contract with another team, because where is he most likely to have a big offensive year? Say Yankee Stadium.
Sandwiched in Yankee Stadium between a bunch of really good hitters.
Right. So he could say, okay, I'll take the 1 year prove me contract. I'm going to hit 25 home runs again. I'm going to play a full season at shortstop, and then somebody will pay me.
Well, Sue, I don't necessarily think he's going to do a one-year deal. I think there's going to have to be some kind of options on the back, and I don't even think it would be a one-year. I think it would be very, very risky for him to sign a one-year deal, honestly, at this point.
But why would, if it's approved me, then why would he want to sign options? He doesn't have control if it's it would be team options, I'm assuming.
No, I don't think it would be team options. That's the thing. Like, if there could be incentives for where player options kick in as well, or automatic kickers for a team option if he hits certain
certain number of plate appearances or finishes top whatever in
exactly. X there's a lot stat, of those. There's a lot of those
it
types of
automatically
contracts that are out
triggers
there.
An option. Yeah, maybe. Exactly. I know. Miguel Cabrera has options at the end of his contract like that. It was like if he finishes top 15 MVP, automatically triggers like a $30 million option for next year.
Right.
So the Yankees could do something like that and then Didi could maybe pay off all the writers to get him some votes, and then, you know, it's a whole big thing.
It'll be interesting to see how this is approached, but I do think other teams will value Didi and he'll be able to get more than a one-year deal. So I think if your scenario played out in the sense that the Yankees offered him a one-year deal, I don't think he'll be back. I actually would put a lot of eggs in that basket and that he would not be back for a one-year deal, because I do believe he can get more than that somewhere else. And when you're talking about guaranteed money for these guys, knowing that injuries can happen. I mean, this guy had Tommy John surgery on his throwing arm as a shortstop. Weird freak things can happen and derail your career. So you have only certain opportunities to get guaranteed money. And when you do, what we've seen lately and the trend has been these guys are taking advantage of that. Aaron Hicks, that 7-year deal is just such a key to me, is such a precedent contract when you're looking at some of these guys who, if they outplay, if they played to their potential on that next year, they could get a much bigger contract. But what did he do? He signed a long-term guaranteed money contract because now he's got money in the bank. He can invest that money. He can take care of his family. He can do all these things. And I think that's extremely attractive to these guys.
And I think Aaron Hicks, when he signed that 7-year contract, it was both parties understood, like, dude, you're always injured. And Hicks is like, damn, I'm always injured. Like, I'm going to get this money while I can. Didi, other than this past year with the Tommy John, that's kind of a more freak injury. I know Hicks just had the same issue with his elbow. But Hicks has had injury problems a lot more than Didi has had injury problems.
You want to know what's funny is that we follow his brother on Instagram.
Hicks's brother,
yeah. And he follows us. And I saw there was a story. I was just flipping through Instagram at one point. And he was coming off the softball field and like someone was talking to him. And he's like, man, I just pulled my hamstring. And he's like talking about how he just got hurt playing softball. I'm like, son of a bitch. This is in the blood. It's genetic. In the family.
Yeah.
This is a genetic problem. Like all the Hicks boys have Uwaya tissue. They got soft tissue injuries. Yeah. Ready. They're just a soft tissue injury waiting to happen.
Cashman's quote on Hicks' Tommy John. He said he's getting Tommy John surgery because he needs it. That's such a classic Cashman quote.
Well, you know what's funny is because he was saying that he didn't need it. Like clear as day.
The whole thing was weird. First he didn't need it. Then he gets his outside medical opinion. And then he's sitting down in Florida, and then all of a sudden he sends like a FOMO tweet.
It's a FOMO tweet. He's like, watch this. Guys, only get the good angles. We need to get on this roster.
Yeah, we didn't see him make like one throw from center field. But he didn't look terrible at that in the ALCS.
No, what I think happened is that he's like, I can swing the bat, so get a video of me throwing so that we can tell them I can throw. But really, I can just swing the bat.
He just sends him the video of that 108-mile-an-hour throw from like 3 years ago. He's like, no, this is yesterday.
Yeah, I just did this. No, it's a whole strange thing with him. But yeah, him coming out saying he needs it is just basically putting to sleep all the other bullshit and him saying that he doesn't need it.
Well,
or anybody else
annoying.
Saying it. Cashman's like, you know what? He needs it. I don't know who's saying that he doesn't need it. He needed it, so we got it.
It's annoying because this could have happened a month and a half ago, and then maybe we have Hicks ready for after the All-Star break next year, and instead he's going to be maybe a September option for them.
I still think he's close. He'll be close to the All-Star break.
They said 10 months, right?
It's before. I mean, I think he's probably 8 to 10 months.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
It's going to be around the All-Star break.
Would it shock you if Hicks has an injury setback? I mean, come on.
No, it would not. But that he could be completely healthy and have an injury setback.
I was reading an article on The Athletic and it was
Golf is out though, right? Golf is done now.
You would think so.
Yeah, hopefully.
That should have been in the 7-year contract.
Do not let us find a video in the offseason of him playing golf. I swear to God.
I read an article in The Athletic, and it was going through every team's biggest needs. And they identified center field as the Yankees' biggest need going into 2020. Do you agree with that?
No.
Yeah, I get why they said it. They laid it out. Well, Hicks is going to be out for most of the year. Brett Gardner's a free agent, and they have only two.
Oh, so they're not counting. They're counting Brett Gardner as a free agent, not coming back as well. So
right. So okay, they said their biggest need entering the offseason is to address the center field position. And while I agree it's a need, they have to do something with the outfield, whether it's sign Brett Gardner back, acquire another outfielder, do something. I would not say that's their biggest need.
So the thing with me is that when you have an offense like the Yankees have currently, you know, they could legitimately go out and sign a defensive center fielder and be okay with that. Focus on the defense, focus on the run prevention, throw him at the bottom of the lineup, and you have a guy. Now you have a stacked lineup with a defensive guy in the 9 hole who, you know, gets what he gets on the plate until Hicks is back or if, you know, if Gardner's out there, obviously, I think they will re-sign him. So I think they could go that route too. But you also have a guy like Mike Tauchman.
I was just going to say, you kind of just described Mike Tauchman. He's a defensive guy. He can play a good center field, maybe not and, to the
and
caliber
he had a month,
of Hicks.
He had a month of Mike Trout stats too, offensively.
He could play center field, I think, for a full season as well as Brett Gardner can at this point.
I don't know what he would be, you know, as far as the metrics go in a full season in center field, but he's right there. He's damn close.
I wouldn't be too worried if their plan going in until Hicks is back is Tauchman plus whoever the other outfield options are. I mean, Florial, he could make a huge advancement.
He's coming off of an injury,
season.
So you never know. Yeah, he could. He could make advancements. He's definitely climbing the ranks.
How about your boy Tyler Wade in center field?
I'm good with that, man. In the last year, I've become from like an Tyler Wade guy to like a let's go Tyler Wade.
You're a
guy.
Tyler Wade truther.
Yeah. Now I have seen his value to this team for a while, and I have said that defensively, when you see the way that this guy is flexible, how flexible he is defensively, that alone is enough value for me to have a guy on the team. But when, you know, he looked much better towards the end of the year offensively.
He
was putting things together. Maybe that's a progression. You know,
but
one
isn't
of the
that
big
classic
things...
Tyler Wade where he shows a flash in the pan of, ooh, he can hit. And then it's like, no, he really can't hit.
Well, I think that one of the things that we had been talking about for a long time about Tyler Wade is that when he can't get the everyday reps and he's not able to be in there, but he's a defensive replacement guy that's going to play two times a week, three times a week max. Can he actually get comfortable enough and have the consistency to have better at-bats in that role? And we hadn't seen it. So maybe there's this, you know, maturation process, of him getting comfortable on the big stage and being able to now kind of tailor himself into that role and get more comfortable and have better at-bats in a situation like that. And if he can do that, and if he can show what he did at the end of the year, I mean, the kid to me is a significant value because he can go all over the place. And it really adds that flexibility for Boone. So yeah, I'm good with that. I could get behind the Tyler Wade in center field for a little while.
Support for Bronx Pinstripes and for Blue Wire comes from Manscaped, who is the number one men's below the belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels. Listen, we've all been there, right? We've all been trimming up below the belt, and it can be scary because you do not want to nick anything. You want to be very careful. That's why Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. Their Lawnmower 2.0 has proprietary skin-safe technology, so this trimmer won't nick or snag your nuts. Manscaping accidents are finally a thing of the past. And you certainly do not want to be using whatever it is you use on your face, if you have a beard or you're clean shaving. Whatever you're shaving your face with, why would you use that on your balls? That's just nasty. So that's why you have to get something different. That's where Manscaped comes in. They also have the Crop Preserver. It's an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. I used this when we went to one of our July events and it was like 105 degrees in the city. And let me tell you, I was one of the least sweaty people at the baseball game. The Crop Preserver was a big reason for that. You can get 20% off plus free shipping with code BLUEWIRE at manscaped.com. Always use the right tools for the job. Your balls will thank you. Get 20% off and free shipping with code BLUEWIRE at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Just use code BLUEWIRE. It is one word. So another big news item was Rothschild was let go. This happened. And boy, did I want to just jump on a podcast to talk about this. Because I think your episode with Lindsay was great. And you summed it up perfectly. Larry Rothschild's every Yankees fan's favorite scapegoat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've talked about this 1,000 times, that coaches and managers get too much blame and not enough credit. Like, that is just understood, right? When something goes wrong, point your finger at Aaron Boone. Point your finger at Larry Rothschild and yell at them. But when the team wins 103 games with all those injuries, no one's pointing at Aaron Boone being like,
they're waiting for the next thing. They're waiting for the World Series.
Well done. Nice job. And when the Yankees pitching staff does something good, even though I think there's a lot still wrong with the pitching staff, no one's saying, oh, good job, Larry Rothschild. Like, no one is crediting. I found it hilarious that Paxton's turnaround in the second half was like, oh, James Paxton is just like, he figured it out. But Larry Rothschild is the one who screwed him up in the beginning of the year. As if Larry Rothschild probably had nothing to do with him turning it around in the second half of the year and him being their best starting pitcher from July through the end of the season.
No, what are you, stupid? It was Carlos Beltran, who's now with the Mets.
Oh, what are we going to do without Beltran fixing tipping pitches?
Unbelievable. How are we going to let that guy go to the Mets? Oh, unbelievable. No, yeah.
I find it funny, though, really quickly, that the Mets strategy for hiring a manager is like, who have the Yankees considered in the past? And let's just go with those guys.
I mean, it's fine. That's what we do. We help them out. Little brother, got to get a little boost. So I really enjoyed the conversation that I had with Lindsay Adler last week about this. We really did this like concentrated, you know, topic of the pitching and specifically talking about the pitching coach and what's happening next. And she's absolutely right. She wrote an article a couple of days before we recorded about, you know, him getting released from his contract. But also talking about, and Frank Marco on our site also keyed in on some of these stats as well. Like, you look at his overall numbers, and I know that's a little, tailored. So when you look at his whole tenure, you see the rankings of where he is in the American League. Granted, there have been other teams with a lot of different pitching coaches, I think. So I think those numbers might be a little skewed in the sense that because they've had one guy the entire time. But they're good. They're good numbers at the end of the day. They're very good numbers when you look at the longevity of his career or tenure with the Yankees. They were good numbers. And yes, he did not get any credit in the second half. And it wasn't just James Paxton. It was the entire pitching staff. The entire starting rotation. Everybody was just that much better after the trade deadline. When Brian Cashman went out there and said, we're good with the guys we have. We're not going out there. And everybody was a rage. What happened? Freaking the pitching showed up and it's like, okay, we're going to try now. We're going to start pitching the way that, you know, people thought we originally could. And we're going to, you know, kind of take this into the playoffs. And for all intents and purposes, all through the second half and into the playoffs, the pitching was not a problem. The pitching lived up to what it needed to be. Granted, it was different. It looked weird because they weren't getting the long starts that we all want. And it's just not the way you want to see it, like visually. But the numbers were there. There's no doubt. And yeah, Larry Rothschild got no credit for it.
Yeah, the end results as far as runs allowed were there. But again, it's a different argument whether or not were the results there and is the strategy viable, I think. And I don't
for
think,
sure.
I don't think Rothschild even controls the strategy. He's not saying we're going to go bullpenning. That's an organizational strategy from Cashman on down. And then Larry Rothschild has the pieces and he does what he can with the pieces.
You do this all the time with that whole Rothschild and Boone thing. And every time I see it, I just every time you say something like this, I just picture you and Neil Keefe just yelling at each other one-on-one in a room. That's my visual. But what I think you don't give enough credit to the opinions of the guys that are in the dugout, because I do believe that one, Rothschild was there for 10 years. He's in these decisions. He's in the room making all of these decisions with the rest of the people. There is a committee of people talking about this, putting their knowledge forward, and then a decision is being made based on all of what they say and what they conclude. Mm-hmm. And I think very heavily influenced, is Larry Rothschild. And another thing that Lindsay was talking about is that one of the things that doesn't get talked about really at all is that Rothschild wasn't just this old dinosaur guy that everybody kind of depicts him as to be, because he kind of looks that way. He was definitely more of a guy that had old school tactics, but also considered all of the new school stuff and was trying to blend it as much as possible. So I think that there's a misconception on the way that these guys influence baseball decisions.
Okay, my point was, though, that he is given the players on the roster and he tries to make them the best pitchers they can possibly be.
Absolutely.
That's all I was saying.
Yeah.
He's not out there. He's not the guy making the ultimate decision on the strategy. Maybe he has his input. Fine. I buy that. But it's ultimately Brian Cashman and his department that is setting the structure and setting the strategy of the Yankees pitching staff.
Yes. So that's why we're seeing kind of a transition to more of
this
landscape.
Because Rothschild is a carryover from
Girardi.
And I think we saw so much turnover in the coaching staff. Rothschild was the only guy.
Specifically in the pitching coaching staff in the organization, too.
It was Rothschild that stayed from Girardi and Harkey that stayed from Girardi. So, two questions. Why did they stay? And then now why are they moving on from them? Because I think that's an interesting conversation.
Yeah. No, I think...
Everybody else switched. So
right. So why? So yeah. I think that, I think Boone saw the advantage of keeping a guy that some continuity of a guy that's, you know, had some manager experience, although not a lot with the Tampa Bay Rays. He was an interim manager, but also has a very comfortable, relationship with a lot of the guys on the team. Because if you listen to the players talk about Larry Rothschild, they're glowing. CeCe, I talked about this with Lindsay. CeCe was very outspoken about the work ethic and the way that the relationship was between Rothschild and the pitchers. And it was always positive. So I think that having that some continuity in your first year, 2 years is important so that there's not a complete turnover in everything. Harkey, another guy that, is beloved, is out in the pen with those guys. Why are we changing that? What's really the advantage of changing that? Are you really going to bring in a guy that's going to make that much of a difference, who stands out there, answers the phone, calls the guys, probably is like the life of the party out there and keeps everybody loose? We'll look at certain things. I don't want to discredit his baseball stuff. I'm sure there's a lot of that too. But there's also
he's tracking B-whips.
Yeah, B-whips. There's a big continuity thing out there with the bullpen because those guys are isolated. He's essentially managing the bullpen. He's the manager in their dugout, which is out in the outfield. So that's a big deal. And I just think now it's just like they slowly, last year they changed the pitching, the personnel in the pitching department. And now it's just the next step. I think that's part of what Driveline is doing.
Yeah, I think when you are restructuring an organization, whether it's a baseball team, whether it's a tech company, whether it's a friggin' restaurant,
yeah,
blowing everything out in like one off season is really risky.
Yeah.
And Rothschild was competent, right? He was a good pitching coach. Was
that's the best not giving him, yeah, competent is not giving the credit he deserves.
He was a good pitching coach.
Yes.
He might not be the best, but he certainly isn't bad at his job. So Cashman is saying, okay, we want to change things. We have a 5-year plan. And if we blow everything out right now, that could blow up in our faces and it could be catastrophic. So let's slowly go through some turnover here. I think this was probably in the plan all along. Just
not spoken.
Yeah. Cashman had a vision for where his coaching staff and analytics department and how everything's going to talk to one another is going to be set up. And he's moving along the process here. He's just taking the steps that he's probably laid out. I think he's very methodical in all of this.
Maybe. I still think you have a different vision of what.
But we know he doesn't.
It's all speculation, but
we know he's like an assassin. He doesn't let recency bias change his opinions. Because if he did, Joe Girardi would still be the manager. Joe Girardi got them to within a couple innings of the World Series. And that didn't change his mind of, oh, now I got to keep Joe Girardi.
That's true. That is very true. That
when
is very true.
Any other general manager, I think, an owner could be like, wait, you want to fire the manager who just got us, who just overachieved with this young group of players? You want to fire this guy who almost made the World Series when we weren't even expected to get past Cleveland? A lot of general managers would not have been allowed to do that.
Right. And I don't necessarily know if it's already just like, this is what's happening, but I think more to Cashman for that and probably the pitching as well. Maybe it wasn't exactly like we're going to get rid of this guy, but in 5 years, this is what our plan's going to be. And does this guy fit that 5-year plan?
Right.
At this point.
And that's how a good front office operates, I think. The reactionary front office is getting trouble. And then you have what the Red Sox are doing, which is a new team president every 3 years.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, they won a World Series, so it's hard to argue against the latter.
They're
their
front office and like management staff has been so dysfunctional, even though they've won 2 World Series this decade. I don't know how it's happened when you look at the dysfunction up there.
Yeah, no, it's interesting to see how that worked out. It's also when you look around the league and
it's annoying.
There's continuity with some of the Nationals had some continuity and they stuck with a plan for a long time. And I think the Bryce Harper thing was definitely in the plans. Like, we're not signing him again. It's just the way that the contract.
Well, they offer him $300 million.
Yeah, but that contract was not what it.
There were deferrals
like on the front.
And stuff.
There was
like
a lot
that,
of difference.
I know,
yeah,
but
the money wasn't exactly the way it looked on paper.
But it's still a lot of money. It's not like they offered him nothing.
It looked better in a tweet, I think, than it did on the contract.
Okay, but hey, the Yankees have done that before.
Oh, for sure,
the Robinson Cano thing. But we offered him more annually than the Seattle Mariners did. That was a big statement from Cashman and Steinbrenner back when he signed in Seattle.
Yeah, and until they went and signed Ellsbury and screwed that pooch.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that.
Just screwed that one completely up.
So I think with what were we just moving on from Rothschild. Yeah, I think the overall philosophy and where the Cashman and the nerds. Maybe we need
look at the guys they're interviewing.
T-shirt of that, but
they're interviewing all of these college pitching coaches, all these guys that are deep into the new technology. And so here's one thing I didn't get a full chance to talk with Lindsay about that I think is an interesting conversation. When you're talking about analytics and new age baseball, right? Like to me that there's two ways to look at that. And I know that they blend together, but there's also two very distinct differences with some of the new age guys. Some of the new age guys are all about the analytics and looking at situations and the numbers and kind of what we've seen play out this year, where we won't go through a third time through the lineup, or, you know, X player won't, it's when he hits a certain amount of pitches, won't see a right-handed batter or a left-handed batter, whatever it is. There's a lot of very numbers-based things. So you have those guys, but then you also have some of the guys that I think are more to what the Yankees are looking for right now, are more of these guys that are on top of the technology of the new age, not just the numbers and the analytics, but the technology that kind of gets to those numbers. You know what I mean? Like, so now we're looking at all of the, all of the different, you know, types of software that's out there. And Joe Randoza put a good article up on Bronx Pinstripes. Go check that out. Talking about, you know, the different selections that the Yankees are choosing to interview. And while they may be deep in analytics, I don't necessarily think they're just, you know, I don't know where those guys are as far as their strategy in game, but I do know where their philosophy is in manipulating a pitch and how they can, you know, select a pitch, how they can better a pitch. We were talking about,
I think it's maximizing
spin rate efficiency.
I think the technology also helps maximize the strengths and minimize the weaknesses of pitchers. And yes. I think that's what the Astros have done, why we've seen Verlander and Cole turn into two of the best pitchers on the planet, is because they maximize their already filthy, ridiculous talent that they had.
Yes, I think they have. Absolutely. Verlander, I still would argue that was never really, there was never really a slip in him. But I think it was the change of
so
scenery.
They talked
was a
about
huge
it
deal for him.
In one of the World Series broadcasts, I think. The biggest change of Verlander when he went from Detroit to Houston is his slider usage. He threw way more sliders than he ever did before with the Astros. So basically he went from a fastball curveball pitcher to a fastball slider curveball pitcher with Houston.
Yeah, that's a huge deal. I mean, you add that third pitch and you bring in a higher percentage of it. That's a big deal. And I think that there was probably some complacency when you're in Detroit and sticking with
something
that's happened.
On a 73-win team, yeah.
Yeah, sticking with what's happened for long. So that change of scenery and getting into some like new eyes was definitely helpful. Like the talent, the arm strength was still there. The arm talent was still there. All that was still there. It was just
was battling injuries. And I think once he got healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was nothing diminished. And that brings us to Cole. And I put out a poll at Yankees podcast. And I said, Gerrit Cole will earn $30 to $35 million annually. How many years are you willing to sign him for? We had over 4,000 people vote. 45% said 6, 32% said 7, 16% said 8, and then there was a bunch of other replies. 7% said other. Some people said, I'm not giving them more than 5. And I think I don't even think Boris and Cole sit down at the table with Brian Cashman if he's only offering Gerrit Cole 5 years.
I think they're going to sit down with Brian Cashman no matter what. And find out
if
what
Brian Cashman says we're not budging over 5 years, they immediately stand up and walk out.
Unless the AAV is insane, because that could happen.
It would have to be like $45 million annually.
Yeah, I don't know. There's so many different ways
what
to
are the
structure
comps?
A contract
because
now.
What are the comps to Gerrit Cole? I'm thinking about. He's going to be 30 next year. So he's 29 right now. He just turned 29 in September. So he's going to pitch a full year at 29 pretty much and then turn 30 next September. So comps that I found are David Price at age 30 signed 7 years, $217 million. Max Scherzer at age 30 with deferral money signed 7 years and $210 million. I think those are the first two contracts that Boris is using as comps to Gerrit Cole. 7 years, $200+ million.
Okay, so I think those are two good ones. I also, you got to, because the landscape of baseball has changed, I think, a little bit as well.
Yeah, these were a couple years ago.
You got to look at what Corbin got last year and use that because this is a guy who came off, this is a guy who came off one very, very good year from the Arizona Diamondbacks and changed his career path, essentially, with the way that those stats looked. And then also pitched well this year too. I mean, I think he led the NL in strikeouts. So you're looking at a guy that kind of fits that mold in what could be that second year after a resurgence year, right?
Well, Cole's had two resurgent years with the Astros, and his career with Pittsburgh was far better than anything Corbin had ever done prior to his last year with Arizona.
That's fine, but he was also the number one guy out there on the market last year, and it's there. The precedent is there. That guy signed a contract. And I think
you want to split. You want to split the difference and say because he signed 5 and 140, Cole's signing for a lot more than 5 and 140. You agree with that?
I agree with that. I don't think it's going to be a lot more though. I think we might be, especially now with Scherzer on there. There's going to be some competition. But
so yeah, I think you could get some,
not Scherzer. I said Strasburg.
Strasburg. He's older though than Cole.
Yeah,
I think Cole's still the top.
Is Strasburg 31? 2 years, maybe a year and a half. 2 years.
I believe 32.
Something like that, yeah. He's got also a lot more injury.
Way more injury history.
Injury history.
Strasburg, as filthy as he can be, and he was the World Series MVP, he scares the crap out of me signing him to a long term.
I'm still surprised he's still pitching, honestly, because when he came up, I really thought that Mark Pryor was happening again. And it looked like for a very long time.
Kind of did. He's 31 years old. Yeah. He turned 31 this past July. So he'll be 32 in the middle of next year, whereas Gerrit Cole will be 30 in September of next year.
Okay.
It's a big difference.
Yeah. About two years. 2 years solid difference.
So I think there is some different things you could fudge with this contract where if you're the Yankees and you're saying, hey, Cole, we're going to give you a player opt-out after 2 years, and we're going to give you like $70 million in the first 2 years, right? And then we're going to taper it off at the end. So Cole could say, I could make $70 million in the next 2 years, pitch two great years, and then opt out and sign maybe another long-term contract. Or if I have some injury problems, or if I have just a down year, then I still have some back years locked in. I could see something like that, and I think I'd be all for that.
Depending on what the competition is for on the contract and how much guaranteed money is there for other people. Again, that's why I think that you have to sit down with every single GM if you're Scott Boras. The landscape has completely changed, especially with these player options. Now you're putting the control back in the driver's seat of the actual player. One thing that I think could be interesting for these specific two guys, because they're the two biggest names, two huge names coming in, probably the two biggest names coming into free agency in a long time, especially the way that the season ended.
Well,
the way that the season
Bryce
ended,
Harper and Manny Machado as
no, I mean
agents.
on the pitching side.
Okay, yes.
And especially the way that the season played out, having these two guys basically duel in the World Series, go to a Game 7, like they were the stars of the series. And if AJ Hinch actually went to Cole in that Game 7, could have been MVP on Cole's side. Just saying,
if the Astros win and Cole pitches in Game 7, he's the MVP.
So you're looking at two of the number one choices for MVP given which team wins. Anyway, my point is, what'll be interesting, I think, in this offseason to look at is Strasburg, his injury history, and the term of the contract that he's going to get. Because I actually think that could be a direct effect now to what Cole could get. Even though they're apples to oranges as far as injury history, there's still two of the best pitchers on there, two both big free agents, two both coming off similar seasons in the sense that they ended in the top. But now one guy definitely has more risk than the other guy. So how are they going to play against each other?
Yeah, and when you look at the last 10 years of Brian Cashman signing big free agents, 2009, obviously, Teixeira, Sabathia, and Burnett. And since then, no pitchers have signed for massive contracts. He signed big contracts. He signed McCann, Beltran, and Ellsbury in 2013. Do you want to consider Tanaka a massive contract? I kind of, even though it was...
You have to throw it in there because it's still a contract that's given out.
It's on the side because he was an international signing and he was 25 years old when they did it.
Right.
So, yes.
It's a different scenario in that sense.
Yes and no. Andrew Miller is a bullpen. Chapman, bullpen. Ottavino Britton, bullpen. He spends money on pitchers in the bullpen. He has not spent big money for MLB free agents... starting pitchers since 2009.
Well,
so
and
I say Why is his philosophy going to automatically change when it's been a certain way for 10 straight years?
Well, I mean, it certainly depends on opportunities as well and who's there and what the value is and what the value play is for each individual player. I mean, Brian Cashman is not stupid in the sense that he's going to stay to – he's not stubborn to the point where I think he has a plan – Stubborn's not the right word.
A fundamental belief of how he thinks a baseball team should be built.
That's fine, but stubborn to a point where you can't consider and deviate based on talent available.
I would hope not.
Yeah, and I think that's something that he can and will do. Although he will be stubborn to the point of a number and to where as far as where he will go. It could change with the way that these. So you're saying that, you know, 7 years, 6 years. I don't know. The fact that Corbin signed for 5 years, I think is telling. I think that there's more money up front.
They're the same age, and Gerrit Cole is a much higher prized free agent than Corbin was last year.
Yeah, because of the way it played out, yes, I agree he's a better pitcher.
Because he's been one of the best pitchers in the American League for two straight years.
Corbin led the National League in strikeouts this year. He did not disappoint on that contract.
I'm not saying he did, but they're in different classes.
Fine,
you have to admit that.
I do admit that. I agree with you in that. I see one is far superior as the other guy. Maybe far superior is, you know, when you look at the numbers, probably isn't actually as correct. But when you look at the two guys that are available now because of that history and the contract from last year with Corbin, there's going to be a lot of that that's played into it from the team side.
Well, then that should scare you as a Yankees fan because Brian Cashman said 105 years as our offer to Patrick Corbin. Take it or leave it.
Fine, but also
$100 million over 5 years was the offer to, and he got 5 years, 140.
Maybe the Yankees see Cole as a much better situation for them.
I would hope so.
and we'll go over. You know, I'm not saying that that's the money. It's going to be higher than that, but yeah, he could have a whatever his cap is, whatever his number is in his head.
How many years would you sign him to?
I mean, I like those player options. I think the player options are strong for everybody. I really do. And I think if you front load the money and you make it super high.
I mean, shit, you could front load $80 million of that.
I mean, F it. I love those contracts.
$40 million each of the first 2 years. Hope he opts out after two. You pay through your
friggin' nose for 2 straight years. It's what the Red Sox did with JD Martinez too. It's what they did with JD Martinez as far as they front loaded that living hell out of that contract. I honestly think those are the smartest contracts. And for a player on a player side, when you see that much money coming at you in that short amount of time, I got to believe it's very difficult to pass up because not only are you in the driver's seat with the amount of money, if you play that contract to the ability, to your ability, and you look good in those first couple of years, now you're back in the driver's seat to do it all over again. Yep. If you don't live up to it, you are taken care of.
Yep.
I mean, it's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah. Cole could say, okay, I'm gonna earn $75, $80 million in the next 2 years. I'm going to crush it and then be a free agent at 31 and sign another 5 or 6 year deal.
And you know what? If my arm falls off, okay, because I'm still getting paid significant amount of money on the back end.
Yeah. $20 million a year or something.
It's a huge security blanket for the player and kind of for the team. Indochino was founded on the belief that you do not have to spend a fortune on a custom wardrobe. Everybody knows it looks so much better when a suit is tailor-made for the individual person. It makes a big difference. It exudes confidence on the guy, and you can get all the little details the way you want them, down to your monogram, some special linings, different things the way you want them, the texture, the quality, all phenomenal with Indochino. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. They make suits, shirts, coats, and even more. And everything is made to your exact measurements for a great fit. They have hundreds of suit options for all occasions, including work, formal events, and even your own wedding. Best part is they're very, very affordable. Almost all of their custom clothing is under $400. The process is simple. You choose your fabric, pick your customizations, and submit your measurements. Your package will be delivered straight to your door in 2 weeks. You can get measured and design your suit at your nearest Indochino showroom or do it all online yourself at Indochino.com. The Black Friday event is on now until December 1st. Get custom suits for just $289 plus their best prices of the year on overcoats, shirts, and more. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Bronx at checkout. Plus, the shipping is absolutely free. That's Indochino.com, promo code Bronx for $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more. An incredible deal for made-to-measure clothing. You really have no excuse anymore to wear clothing that doesn't fit.
All right, any World Series thoughts? The Nats? Were you rooting for the Nats or the Astros, or did you not really give a shit?
Oh, no, I was definitely rooting for the Nats. There's no doubt about that.
Well, I know really your mother-in-law is a Nats fan.
My mother-in-law
fan,
is
so
a big Nationals
thrilled.
Fan. She's excited. She's extremely excited. She was down and out. I mean, I shouldn't say this, but there were definitely
times
conversations.
In the playoffs, they were down and out.
No, in the beginning of the season, I mean. Because they were terrible in the beginning of the season. They had a really, really bad run. The bullpen was in shambles. She was just coming over because she watches Kemp during the week on a few days. And she was just like, so what are the Yankees doing? You guys need you need another fan in your base? I'm like, hey, come on over. Let's go. You know, you can do whatever you want at this point in your life.
Send Strasburg or Scherzer over while she's coming over.
Yeah, but I mean, I was rooting for them too because it's just I like Zimmerman. He's kind of like friends of some of my friends of mine. So I've actually had some like social interactions with him. He's a like super laid back dude. I was happy for him. He's meant a lot to that organization, and he's just been, you know, he's been the guy that's been there for their first draft pick is still there. It's kind of crazy.
You know what I equated him to is when Alex Gordon won the World Series with the Royals.
Yeah.
Where he's not really like the main player anymore.
Right.
But still ton of Zimmerman jerseys running around Nationals Park and stuff. So
absolutely. Yeah. It's a good comparison. He's just like a team guy. And I think it's a little different in this sense because it was the first draft pick of the Nationals when they were the Nationals and, you know, moving from the Expos. Yep. There's a significance in that draft pick. So I was happy for him, man. Juan Soto's a cocky little bitch.
I like it though.
He's fun to watch. Yeah.
Because when you're comparing, so he did the bat carry after Bregman did the bat carry. Yeah. And I loved it. I thought it was great because I was rooting for the Nationals. So
well, right, exactly. It's all about who you want.
As soon as Juan Soto hits a 480-foot bomb off the Yankees, which he did last year, but I'll no longer be a Juan Soto fan. But for the last couple weeks, I've been a Juan Soto guy.
Especially when you're looking at Bregman, who's a cocky dude as well, and he's just kind of like matching
you know
it.
I don't even really hate Bregman. I know I should.
I like to hate him.
But I kind of respect the cockiness.
Yeah, I'm fine with the cockiness. I think the cockiness plays. They should be cocky. They should be as confident as you possibly can be. They are Major League Baseball players and at the highest level and playing in like the greatest. The Soto thing. He doesn't respect the game. Yeah,
Shut
it's
up.
All a bunch of bullshit. The lean forward gets me every time.
Yeah, dude. He's so animated in the box.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's straight up like I'm gonna fight you. it's like a Mortal Kombat move when he takes a pitch. It's unbelievable.
Deep squat, stretching those hammies out.
And he leaned. It's like a full like lean towards the pitcher. Yeah. Like I'm coming at you. So as a pitcher, when you see that, like that is there. That is definitely there on every pitch, and you know it's in their head. How can it not be? I haven't seen anything like that as intentional, like towards the pitcher, as I've seen with Soto. So I think it's entertaining.
You mentioned Hinch not using Cole. I don't know how he doesn't use Garrett Cole. That's a borderline fireable offense, in my opinion.
I mean, you can't say fireable offense. Is that as egregious as Showalter not using Britton?
Yes.
I don't think it's as egregious because Cole was on short rest, different type of scenario. The Showalter thing was mind-boggling.
You got to get Garrett Cole at the very least in that game when it's only a one-run game in the eighth inning.
Yeah. I mean,
he's out there warming up. He's in your bullpen. There is literally no tomorrow.
Right.
I agree. He's not even going to be on the team because he had that Boris Korp hat ready to go. So he is out of Houston. You could have him throw a million pitches, and it is not your problem.
The Boris hat was going on as soon as he didn't get in the game, right? He's like,
yes.
F these guys, what are we doing here?
Yes.
I'm the best pitcher on the team, bar none, your best option, and you went with Will freaking Harris.
You used Will Harris to try to get out of an inning. Okay.
Who's been used a lot. We would have killed him for that if he was a Yankee manager because Will Harris was used a lot.
You then bring in, who'd they bring in? Urquidy after that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Idiot. Idiot.
He shoved the bats down our throats.
But idiot.
Yeah.
AJ Hinch, you are an idiot.
It's a big overthink. That's what it is. It's an overthink. And you know what it might be?
If I were Garrett Cole, I would have just kicked that bullpen door open. And
let me tell you what it might be, actually. They're looking at the freaking numbers. And the numbers are saying X player on short rest.
There's no number that says
has the velocity and has the spin rate efficiency, and it's diminished by 13.5%. And because of that, Urquidy came out and his velocity and spin rate efficiency is not diminished one bit. Let's go with him. The numbers say it. Nerds say it. Let's go.
Did you have a
not even looking at what's happening on baseball and with your eyes?
Did you have a problem with Cole wearing the Boris hat afterwards?
I don't give a shit.
In that situation, I saw Yankee fans like, oh, this is not a guy we want on our team. This is not a team player.
Please.
He can't even represent the Houston Astros for another 5 minutes.
No,
I don't know why I'm doing this voice.
What? That is the dumbest thing. How many guys don't wear hats in post-game interviews?
I beg people, don't get upset when a professional athlete takes the most money. Like, it's their livelihood. It is their job. They are trying to get the most money. Yes. We love the story.
Most guaranteed money, too.
We love the story when a guy says, I'm going to take a hometown discount to play here because I like playing here. Those are few and far between, and I get it. I love that, too. But you cannot get upset when a guy takes the biggest contract offer given to him.
And let's all be very clear. There's all these, you know, the picture of Garrett Cole holding a sign at a Yankee game, and he's a Yankee fan and all this bullshit. He grew up in Southern California, and guess what? Joe Maddon just went to the Angels. That's a win now move.
Yep.
And also, they have a ton of money.
Yeah, so they just signed Mike Trout to $400 million. They have Ohtani coming back. They have, yes.
You don't think they're going to try to go after that right now? And
see, this is the problem. They shove money up. Angels hand out dumb contracts.
Oh, so yeah, they do.
They will offer him something that
stupid.
Brian Cashman will put his feet up and laugh at.
Yes, and it's a hometown deal in the sense that it's his hometown.
Yeah, he can play both sides of it. Right. Yeah, I just signed $300 million, but I'm coming home, baby.
Yeah, so it's going to be a hurdle. Like, I think everybody should get their expectations in line for Garrett Cole just signing with the Angels. And if it doesn't happen, and if he goes to the Yankees, great. But don't count on it. Just assume he's going to sign with the Angels. It'll be much better for your headspace.
Can we all also acknowledge Verlander lost the Astros the World Series?
Is Verlander now 0-6 in World Series appearances? I think he is. 0-7 maybe? 0-6.
Starts.
Because
I believe, didn't he pitch well in one of the relief games against the Dodgers a couple years ago?
Here's what I see. 0-6. I don't care.
Wins don't matter until they support your argument.
Until they are right behind me. Yeah, no, it's pretty crazy. But you see that Cole's going to get a ton. And so there's a very real scenario that the Yankees come out 0-2 from both of these guys. And that's okay.
Quote, Yankee fans, right?
Well, there's a scenario that the Yankees don't get either one of these guys. When there's two of them, they're like, we got to get one of them. If Strasburg
you're talking about Strasburg. I thought you were talking about Corbin last year. I thought you were saying the Yankees.
No, this
fans.
Year. This year with the two free agents. First of all, I kind of think Strasburg is going to re-sign with the Nats. I do think that's going to happen. I think they will give him the money that he wants.
Although,
he's also in a point where he's going to be. I mean, that guy's getting a statue outside the field.
But they also have Rendon to worry about.
Rendon, but yes, I. But their pitching was. They got to lock down that pitching again. I still think he's going to sign there. If he doesn't, then that's one thing. I thought Bryce Harper was going to sign there too, but I was wrong. So I think the Yankees are behind the ball on that one. With that and the money, it's a risky contract still. Like, don't. Don't just look at what just happened. Like, there's a lot of risk with him and that arm, and then Garrett Cole with Anaheim or the LA Angels, whatever the hell they are now. That's a big thing to overcome because they're gonna give him a ton of money.
So yeah,
I could easily see them going over to him, both of those guys.
You know, remember what happened last year when the Yankees went over on the big free agents people thought they were gonna get. So.
Well, guess what? If Luis Severino was
prepared for freakouts,
if Luis Severino was healthy this year, we would not be having these same conversations because we would have Severino as if he was the ace of the staff that we all, you know, that he was before an injury, then, you know, I think a lot of people are much better with the pitching staff and what Brian Cashman has assembled. If Severino is healthy and Domingo Germán doesn't do some stupid shit off the field.
I don't know. I don't think that's fair either. I think because you have to plan for injuries. That's part of building a team. Injuries happen. It's you can't just say, "Oh, well, he got injured, so we're off the hook."
When you're dealing with a starting pitching staff and you have X amount of spots and you can't just stash a stud guy in case someone gets hurt, it's It's not something that you can totally plan for. You got to plan for it with your depth. You got to plan for it in other ways. You can't just go out
there. Okay, yeah, you got to plan for it with their depth. They have depth in the bullpen. They have depth in the position player part of the team. They did not have starting pitching depth.
It's hard to have starting pitching depth. That's my point.
It's hard, but you're the New York freaking Yankees. You should do it. You should be able to do it. I know it's unrealistic to have five starting pitchers pitch 30 games a year. Like, that never happens. And when it does happen, it's few and far between, but that team usually wins the World Series, because that's pretty much what happened with the Red Sox last year, where they had their four starting pitchers go through the season, very few injuries, and then, boom, they were healthy for the playoffs. But that is the exception, not the rule.
And one of them went into the pen and dominated.
It's the exception, not the rule, though.
I agree.
So you have to plan for injuries. It's just part of building your team. And somebody else will get injured in the Yankees rotation next year.
The funny thing with that argument, though, is that you say that it was an exception because they had four guys. Look what happened with the Red Sox this year when they still had all of those guys. They were still deep in the deep quote in the rotation, and then you have one or two injuries and it completely derails everything. But they still had depth.
They didn't have depth after those four starting pitchers.
Where do you want this depth to live? How many you want five stud starting pitchers on a staff?
No, like, I just said just five studs is unrealistic, but you have to have more than three, which is what the Yankees had.
But my point is, like, the Red Sox had four guys that pitched like that, and they had the depth, and then one or two get injured, and then it all crumbles. Yeah. It'll still all crumble if you have four.
You're gonna have injuries, so I don't think saying, oh, we're getting the plan should not be we're getting Severino back and Jordan Montgomery is going to pitch a full season. That should not be the plan entering next year.
They should add one more guy for sure. I don't know how you can add anything more than one, though. It'll be hard unless you make trades.
One's a big help. That's gonna do it for us. We're gonna be continuing. There'll be some more one-off episodes like Scott and Lindsay did a couple days ago. If you have not listened to that, go check that out. Still going to be an episode that comes out every Monday, and then we'll add where needed if something crazy happens, a signing. Those one-off conversations, like you said, are always fun to do. Any final words?
No, that's it. We're going to be putting out, exactly like you said, I think we're going to do some different things this offseason. I'm excited for it.
We got to do our GM plans, too. You want to do that soon?
Yeah, let's do that soon. Probably maybe after Thanksgiving. What about around...
But the problem with that is, though, that...
When are the winter meetings? Second week?
I think we need to do it in the next couple weeks, because if guys start to sign, then that's going to change.
Okay, yeah. So, all right. So let's call it. Let's give ourselves a week to do it.
Yeah.
All right. So next week.
Good talk. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.